This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download podcast. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we discuss the experience of COVID-19 from an Asian perspective.
Even our experience of having been through the Asian financial crisis and also the Great Recession, you know, did not prepare us for how severe the kind of activities grinding the halt has been during this crisis.
The risks posed to investing in the region.
As they gradually reopen the economy, we do get clusters of new cases that come up. So not just in China, but also in South Korea. That has implications. That really tells us that the reopening needs to be done in a very measured manner. And if it's not done well, I think that's where the potential risks are.
And the rewards.
Governments has been very successful in preventing immediate bankruptcies. I think that will continue to be the case. Now, as economies reopen, I would also expect the good quality corporates to return to profitability. So right now, these corporate bonds are actually offering about a 1 to 2% higher credit spreads compared to the start of the year.
And welcome to the show. I very much hope everyone is well. Previously, we've looked at the crisis through a Western perspective. This week, we thought we'd head east, not least because they're a little bit further down the line in dealing with COVID-19. With me today to perhaps provide a glimpse into our future, we've got a fund manager on the show. It's Kin Wing Pang. He's based in Singapore. Kin Wing, how are you?
Hi, David. I'm good. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm based in Singapore, and Singapore has just announced that they'll be lifting the what we call the circuit breaker. So it's a form of a lockdown. So we are into the first phase of the easing of the lockdown.
And where are you recording from at the moment?
I'm still working from home. So yeah, unfortunately, in the phase one, we're still highly encouraged to work from home if possible. So yeah, I'm very much still stuck at home for now.
Yeah, and how are you finding that?
Mixed feelings, actually. I would say the positive of, working from home is that we know that technology right now enables us to do so. And I save time from commuting to work, so I can wake up a little bit later than usual. So that's a positive. But I think I definitely do miss the office interaction, and definitely, you know, all the team discussions tends to be more productive, I would say, if we can have face-to-face meetings. And I also miss the food around my workplace as well.
Okay, so in the first part of the show, we're going to take a little step back in time to discuss the experience of the virus taking hold in Asia. Okay, so on this side of the world, over in the West, it was like watching a car crash in slow motion almost. But Kin Wing, when did you realise this was more than just a bad flu virus?
I would say that the first signs, the first news that came to us in Singapore was just before Chinese New Year. So just a few days before we go for our holiday for the Chinese New Year, that's when we get news that China in Wuhan has a virus that is spreading. At that point in time, we're still not too worried about it because they're saying that it's quite far away. But as we enter into Chinese New Year, then we start to hear of cases surfacing, not just in China, but also in Singapore. It takes about 2 weeks. So the lockdown really happened after that, and some Chinese tourists has come to Singapore. And that's when we realized that, hey, this thing is really spreading. It reminds us of SARS. So I've been through SARS. So initially I was thinking that, yes, the measures are already in place. We know how to deal with it. But the virus actually proved a lot more contagious and hard to detect. So I think that's why we have just a few weeks after that, we get some pretty massive numbers happening all over the world.
So Chinese New Year, we're talking early February. Singapore has been praised with its handling of the virus, certainly with the number of infections not as high as they have been over in the West. What role has the government played in that?
I would say that the government has been has learned a lesson, I would say, from the SARS experience about 17 years ago. So a lot of the measures which they have practiced through contact tracing and also through quarantine were put into play quite early on. I think despite that, the differences between this current very contagious virus and with SARS does pose some challenges to our government as well. So because of that, the numbers, though, I would say, it's not low, but it did not overwhelm our health system. So that's something that I'm very thankful for.
And is that the big difference between the way governments in Asia have acted to the ones in the West, the fact that you've had that experience before?
I would think so. I think that we have the experience before, and the memory is still fresh in our mind as well, how it was quite a very difficult half 6 months period for those who experienced the SARS situation. And so we did move quite quickly to try to contain the spread of the virus. So, and the measures in place, I would say, are very practical in the sense that around in the West, we are not averse to wearing the mask. So that helps. In Singapore, it was slightly different in the sense that because there was a lack of supply of masks, so the government actually took the very difficult decision to prioritize the use of masks for the healthcare workers rather than for the general population. And I think somewhere down the road, that actually has resulted in quite a spike in the number of cases in Singapore.
And what did the lockdown look like for you? Was it different from what you're seeing from what we're doing in the West?
I would say, yes, it does feel quite different because over here in Asia, there isn't really much panic. Well, I'm speaking for Singapore. There isn't really much panic, I would say. So we have been through the experience. We know roughly what to expect, and we're listening for directions as well from the government. What I know is generally across Asia, in most places, people know roughly what to do. Either they listen to what the government have to say, or they would buy the necessary equipment like a mask and also stock up food at home to try to, you know, go through this lockdown period. So there were initially some cases of rushing for toilet papers and canned food. I think that's expected, but the panic buying actually died down quite quickly.
And obviously you're a fund manager, you're looking at the markets all the time. Were there any signs in the financial markets of the severity before governments actually started a lockdown?
The financial markets really started reacting quite quickly. It reacted somewhere around February. So, but it was really truly at the start of March where it became quite obvious that the virus is not going to be contained within China. That's where the financial markets really took a huge tumble. So March was really a difficult period. Even our experience of having been through the Asian financial crisis and also the Great Recession, you know, did not prepare us for how severe the kind of activities grinding the halt has been during this crisis. So it was really something quite remarkable.
And was it indiscriminate selling in financial markets, or were there certain sectors or areas that suffered more than others?
I would say that the response initially was quite similar to what you would expect from a crisis. So something very similar to the GFC. So the indiscriminate selling, and then after that, the loss of correlations between asset classes. Generally, when equities go down, we expect bonds to hold up and gold to hold up as well. So that did so during the first 2 weeks of March. But as you approach the last 2 weeks of March, that's where the correlations between asset classes broke down. That usually happens when investors were just selling in order to meet redemption. So it has come to pass where with indiscriminate selling, it also comes an opportunity for people to pick up assets on the cheap as well.
And in the next part of the show, we'll be looking at what the easing of the lockdown looks like in Singapore. So, King Wing, what does an easing of lockdown look like in Singapore?
Singapore has adopted a three-phase approach to opening the economy. So right now, we are in phase one. Phase one actually doesn't feel that much different from the lockdown because most people are still encouraged to work from home. The difference, I would say, is more in education. So school children are now encouraged to go back to schools, but in a staggered manner. So office workers who really need to go to work, they are allowed to, but they are also expected to practice social distancing in the office and also put on a mask in the office as well. So I would say that for me, it actually doesn't make much difference, but it is really phase two that I'm looking forward to because in the phase two of the reopening, that's where we get to go to restaurants and start dining in again and gathering in groups of not more than, I think the number has not come up yet. I think it's not more than five so far. So phase two is something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, that seems incredible to us over here. So certainly in the UK, we've only been in lockdown possibly just over 2 months. And now already the restrictions are being lifted. You see people on the beaches, in the parks. Yeah, you guys in Singapore, you've been pretty much in some form of lockdown or certainly a change of lifestyle for the best part of the last 6 months. And you're still only just coming into the phase that we're in now. Does it worry you how quickly things seem to be moving in the West compared to what you're experiencing in Singapore?
Well, I guess in the West, because of our experience with SARS, we do tend to be more cautious because we're quite wary of the second wave coming back because that's exactly what happened during SARS. So maybe the difference is that Asians just tend to be more cautious about health issues. So to that extent, I do have a bit of a concern over the speed of the easing of the lockdowns in the West, but I would also tend to believe that even individual countries do have in place certain measures to ensure that imported cases do not spike as well.
Okay, so you've had a gradual easing of a lockdown in Singapore. Other Asian countries are slightly ahead of where you are now. What's the data like since coming out of lockdown in terms of economic recovery and certainly the impact on financial markets?
Yeah, definitely. That's where I would look to China to give us a bit of a reference point. So China is the first one to emerge from the lockdown. And the data are, in terms of traffic, they are almost back to 80 to 100% of the normal traffic on a daily basis. The manufacturing as well as imports and exports number, the trade data are also gradually recovering. So I think that holds quite a lot of a bit of a promise and optimism for the rest of the world. So if the virus can be well contained, if social distancing proves to be effective, then I think we do have this potential for life to return back to normal, but it's going to be really gradual.
So from what you've seen so far, what type of economic recovery are you expecting, certainly for the rest of the year, perhaps even into 2021?
I don't think the chances of a V-shaped recovery is very strong, but it's potentially, we can debate on the alphabet of the recovery, but I think because of the human nature and how the efforts to deal with the virus means that we need to have subdued economic activities in order to contain it, just means that even as global economies move towards a reopening, the recovery is really going to be very gradual. So I'm not pinning too much hope on the vaccine. I'm actually looking at potentially at the reopening of the economies, what opportunities that could bring us and where the risks are. And also on a longer term basis, how this pandemic could have accelerated certain trends which we could capitalize on.
And in the next part of the show, we're going to actually look at Asian opportunities from an investment perspective, the risks and rewards. First of all, let's start with the negative. Let's go with the risks first, then go to the positive. So what are the risks with the Asian opportunities and the investments over there?
I would say that the risks are really in absence of a vaccine, it will be the second wave. So far, the policies that we have adopted to try to contain the virus has been quite reassuring. So again, I would look to China and also Korea and also Taiwan as an example of how to manage the virus situation well. So China is the first one. As they gradually reopen the economy, we do get clusters of new cases that come up. So not just in China, but also in South Korea. That has implications. That really tells us that the reopening needs to be done in a very measured manner. And if it's not done well, I think that's where the potential risks are. The knock-on effects from that is that if the economy were to be really too cautious about reopening, then I think job losses will come in massively. So right now, the governments, as well as the central banks have been supporting the credit space. So that has prevented corporate bankruptcies. Government has put in place this Band-Aid, even though it's massive, it's helped to prevent widespread bankruptcies. But it is temporary, so it needs to be topped up as and when.
Is there any surprising areas of the markets that you feel might be an area that could reward investors?
Yes, so I've mentioned that in this environment, it is a low interest rate for a longer environment. And generally speaking, I would say that the high income generating assets tend to do well in this low interest rate environment. So in Asia, I would look at REITs. The REITs are real estate investment trusts. They tend to invest into like rental units, either in terms of retail rentals or office space or even hotels. And the revenues that's being generated will be returned to the investors as dividends. So even before the crisis, we're talking about between 4 to 6% dividend yield on REITs. So right now they are even more attractive because of the sell-off that we've experienced in March. REITs is a broad category of businesses. There are the retail REITs we have already mentioned, but there are also industrial REITs. Industrial REITs are looking interesting to us because they mostly house data centers and machines rather than human beings, so they're less dependent on human footfall. So we believe that these industrial REITs at this point in time, they will be in demand because of the work from home requirements. And also the upcoming Internet of All Things, which will be powered by 5G communication technology. So we think that this digitization trend will continue to benefit industrial REITs.
And interestingly, you mentioned in their dividends over here, certainly in the UK, governments have been encouraging companies to certainly withhold dividends and protect their balance sheets. Is it slightly different for companies in Asia?
Over here in Asia, it's slightly different because the governments, they did not ask the corporates to avoid paying dividends. In fact, instead of directly supporting corporates with lots of loans, the government fiscal government measures here tends to be more targeted in the sense that the government fiscal measures has moved towards supporting employment and also cutting costs in terms of tax, in terms of rental rebates, etc. So that actually means that it doesn't create this sense where the government has given loans to corporates and the corporates then could use these loans to pay off the shareholder. That's not the case. What the government is doing is really trying to ensure that companies have the ability to pay wages and so prevent a massive round of retrenchments. So because of that, I would say that Asian corporates, they may cut dividends because of the loss of revenues, but they are definitely not under pressure to stop paying dividends altogether in exchange for government support.
That's the standout in equities. What about bonds and credit?
Yes, definitely. I think credit being an income instrument, will do well in a low interest rate and for longer environment as well. Now, on credit, this is where I started to get more positive on credit much earlier on, much earlier than equities, because credit spreads have really widened to an extent which was unprecedented and unwitnessed since the Great Financial Crisis. And I've also mentioned that the government has been very successful in preventing immediate bankruptcies. I think that it will continue to be the case. Now, as economies reopen, I would also expect the good quality corporates to return to profitability. So right now, these corporate bonds are actually offering about 1% to 2% higher credit spreads compared to the start of the year.
Is there any longer-term trends that support Asian investment?
Firstly, in Asia, it is still a developing economy. So the growing middle class in Asia, the trend of that happening, it still remains intact. So I would say that is going to drive a lot of the growth. What the pandemic has done was really accelerated the need for greater digitization in these Asian economies. As we know from our experience from working from home, there is a lot of demand on the bandwidth for internet connection. And also, I think for speaking to some of my friends, they have said that certain companies' technology was still quite lacking. So which tells me that there is going to be a lot of demand for all this digitization trend. So with a focus on 5G infrastructure spending, as we know all over the world that is happening, especially in Asia, that seems to be moving a lot stronger with China and South Korea putting a lot of money into 5G spending. We believe that that's going to power the Internet of Things, and I also believe that the future in Asia will be very much different from what we're experiencing now. The way that we have been conducting our lives in terms of business and leisure will also change, because we will have to adapt to safe distancing measures in the absence of vaccines, which I would say might take some time to come. That actually holds great opportunities for digitized alternatives to our current way of life.
That's great. Hopefully plenty of investing ideas out there for our listeners. Kin Wing Pang, thank you very much for joining us.
That was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us and ask us a question, it's schroderspodcast@schroders.com. To read more, go to schroders.com/insights. And to listen to more, go to schroders.com/the investor download. You can also rate, review, and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are available every Monday and Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.